It can only be Millennial. And now here is your host, Millennial Woes.
Hello, and welcome back to Millennial X. This is the final stream for tonight, and it's one that I know I've been looking forward to. I think probably other people will have as well. It's Hearthfire Radio, and this is Dave Martell and Mike from Imperium Press. So Big Dave is always quite a character. Hello, Dave. There he is with the shades. And Mike. So hello, Mike and Dave. Welcome back to Millennial.
Thank you so much for having us, man. I look forward to this. I love this. This is so great. The whole year, especially when it starts feeling cold. Oh, man, Millennial's coming up. I can't wait.
I know it gets a lot of guys through, too, because it's a real cozy atmosphere. It's very communal and everything. It's a very important thing. So it's great to be back. Always have a great time while we're here.
Well, thank you very much for saying that. That is the whole point of it. That the whole goal of it is that to create a communal atmosphere for us during what could otherwise be quite a lonely time of year for quite a lot of people. I mean, it's well known that a lot of people find this a hard time of year to get through, especially if they're not married, if they don't have families, etc. But even with that, it's still nice for us, for our community, to have something. I mean, there are other things as well that bind us together and bring us together. But I think it's nice to have something specifically for Christmas. So I'm very glad to be able to do this. Anyway, let's get to the actual topic, which is Hearthfire Radio. Now, this is obviously something new this year. You both appeared last year as the Culture Dads. Before we get to Hearthfire, is Culture Dads still going?
Oh, yeah, big time. We just recorded episode 120, I believe. So we have crossed the 100 yard line, well into the end zone. We're crushing it, killing it. Folks are loving it. K-Dads is rocking and rolling.
Okay, great. I'm very pleased to hear it. With that said, then, what is Hearthfire Radio? What is the describe the project and its goals? Dave, you go first.
So Hearthfire Radio is a media platform that was put together by, it's actually Mike's original idea. He pulled me and said, hey, what do you think about this? We were stewing on it for quite a while. And he said, why don't we build a media platform for those of us that are in the folkish religious community, meaning heathens, Germanic pagans, XYZ, because we don't really have a central platform like that. And I think that's a really good idea. So we started kicking some ideas back and forth, and Mike did all the heavy lifting. He does all the work. He's the big brain of the operation, all the operations we do. But anyway, we put together the whole thing. We brought on some of our friends, some of our favorite creators and thinkers and performers, or you know, all the heavy hitters that are kind of in our religious media sphere, and brought them together for this kind of one central platform. And we have a lot of kind of vision for it, but as what it is right now, it's sort of like a Spotify or perhaps like a YouTube, or it's just a central media platform for folks that are interested in ancient Germanic religious tradition, in our folkish tradition, to go and check out media in the modern context, which is obviously podcasts, video form, XYZ, the type of media and content that people walking around today consume, that isn't just old books or old translations of books, which are great and phenomenal. We love those. But that's a daunting task, right, to go through and read things like Saxo Grammaticus or Culture of the Teutons and the older translations of the Poetic Edda and stuff like that. And it's also, there's an entire just ocean of muck and mire and crap in regards to learning about the tradition of our ancestors. If you are born of a northern peoples, to find the religion that your ancestors practice when you first come in is a mess. right? You got to read through all kinds of weird occultic stuff. You got to read through Wiccan and New Age garbage and just a bunch of crap. There's always a bunch of crap. So when folks want to come in and learn about their faith, the faith of their forefathers, long ago, is pretty much what our ancestors have practiced for the majority of our existence. You could say forever, either the Germanic tradition or Indo-European religious tradition or beyond. It's a daunting task to get into it. So we wanted to package it in a way that it is digestible for modern people and also fun and educational, but also branches out into all kinds of other avenues as well. For folks that aren't familiar with our faith community, for the folkish community, we punch way above our weight when it comes to creativity and things like that, right? Poetry is kind of our thing, poetry, writing, storytelling, we're a very artsy type of people, right? It's just, if you go to like one of our gatherings or one of our events, you're going to run into a guy that publishes, that's a fiction writer. You're going to run into a painter. You're going to run into a guy that does sculpting. You're going to run into a guy that's a chef. All of the above, anything, commercial arts, freaking, musicians, everything you could think, all under the sun, you're going to run into that. So I was like, why don't we get this all together and start putting this together? So we reached out to some of our favorite creators, guys like the Golden One, guys like Tom Rousel, guys like Dan Kapp from the Fjergen, guys like the Wessex Nomad, so on and so forth. We got a bunch of folks that we wanted to reach out to, and we're like, yo, guys, let's put this all together and see where it goes and try to build something big and great and beautiful and awesome and educational and sort of community as well for folks that might be looking for a community or trying to find people that are in real life doing community. So we put it all together and we put it out there. Mike did all the work. He got it all together. He did all the actual nuts and bolts of the operation. I pretty much just went out on whatever microphone people would hand me and ran my mouth about it and tried to bring people in, but we did the thing and we put it together, and it's been beautiful. There's been ups and downs. Building a huge platform like this is so much work, and YouTube wasn't built by just like one guy, right? So it's really an insurmountable task that has been taken on here, but it's been such a fruitful endeavor, and most of the wrinkles are ironed out, and the platform works great, and it's been so much fun, and we have so much good content on there, and I'm just very, very proud of the work that we've done over there.
Okay, excellent. Mike, would you like to give your perspective on this and what your motivation was and how the idea came to you in the first place?
Sure. Yeah. No, that was a great summary by Dave there about the background of our community and what it is that we're doing. As far as like the genesis of Hearthfire and how it came to me, I mean, because I work from home, I have a lot of time to listen to podcasts while I work. Well, not a lot of time. A lot of what I do, I wouldn't be able to listen to podcasts while I do it, but there's some things, if I'm doing a task that's a little bit more robotic or whatever, or that doesn't require me to sort of concentrate on writing or language stuff, then I can sit there and I can listen to podcasts while I do certain things. And that's exactly what I did. I found myself downloading as many of the best podcasts in our space as I could. And because I am a pagan, I'm just naturally attracted to those kind of podcasts, right? Like learning stuff about our religion as much as I can, listening to people who are, just talking about it in a more casual sense, how it applies to culture, everything like that. I just love that kind of stuff. So what I did was, over time, I compiled like a notepad file of the heathen podcasters and others as well. Basically my favorite podcasters sort of went into this file, and I would have to just check their Telegram feeds, check their websites, and check this and that and this and that. And I thought to myself, this should all be in one place. There, at the very least, there should be like a link tree or something like that, that just like has everything listed so that you can just, like, a one-stop shop where you just go there and figure out what's new, like an RSS feed or something like that. And then as time sort of went on, just sort of thinking about this, I thought, well, maybe it should actually be on like a platform. Maybe there should be like a YouTube style site. Maybe there should be a Spotify kind of thing where all these things are collected together. And of course, like the wheels start turning and I'm thinking, oh, well, maybe that's something that we could do. It takes money to get this off the off the ground. So we had to kind of squirrel away a little nest egg to, because building websites and, hiring people to do tech work and whatnot, like this is, it's above my head. There was a time maybe 15 years ago that I would have been able to build, that I did build a website, but it is way above my pay grade now. So we've got to get guys on board to do this kind of stuff. And I just thought to myself, okay, well,
just in case anyone doubts that, I mean, I would just interject and say it really is. Even in 2010, it was doable for one guy to design and run and program a website. But at this point, it's extremely, the whole thing has become much more complicated.
You need to be a specialist in order to design a website, which I'm not anymore. So that was kind of out of my wheelhouse. So, we just basically gathered our resources, started talking to people, got some sort of handshake agreements, like, okay, if we get this off the ground, let's get your podcast on here and whatnot. And one of the things that we've done that I think is really great is that none of these are just taking existing podcasts and monetizing them. That would be kind of, that would be a little bit scummy or whatever. But what we do is we've actually created all new podcasts or exclusive content with existing podcasts. So everything that you get on Hearthfire is just like not available anywhere else, right?
It's a bevy of exclusive content.
Yeah, exactly. We're not just mirroring people's like YouTube channels or anything. And another thing that was happening that sort of played into this is that I noticed a number of my favorite podcasts had kind of gone by the wayside, like they stopped over time. Not because people didn't appreciate them, because they very often had like a big listenership, but that it was for want of financial support. And I thought to myself, well, this is a problem that we need to be able to solve. If we can't solve that problem, how are we going to do more? Like, whether it's in the dissident space or the pagan or whatever it is, if guys can't make a living doing these things, how are we going to change the world? So we just kind of thought, well, that needs to change. People need to be able to at least earn something doing these podcasts. So we thought, well, one thing that we could do is to pool everybody together, as many of the big names as we can, to basically give people a good value proposition. So if they're going to pay, it's $12 a month for this service, they want to get 3 to 5 podcasts a week kind of thing. So we thought that maybe if we could get everybody together, we could kind of, basically there'd be like a network effect, right? Where it would be like the one place that everybody goes to get this kind of content. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that that model has actually worked. People really like it. Everything on there is super high quality. It's like, it's a little bit of a selfish thing, because now basically what I wanted, which is just like a place to listen to all my favorite podcasts, is now exists. I'm really happy about that, because now it's just solved the problem that I had back in the day, So it's awesome, and I'm really glad that that it's gone off. It's actually quite a white pill to see something in the space where we now have our own platform. Nobody is going to deplatform me from this website, because it's our website, and this is a big step forward, I think.
Yeah, the thing about a network effect and financing is absolutely true. And this is something that I've tried to impress upon people over the years, is that it would be nice if people were motivated purely by the cause or purely by a love of the thing, whatever it is. But in the real world, people do need money. And if they can make a living from doing the thing that they're doing, then that means they don't need a full-time job. They might just need a part-time job, or they might just be able to dedicate themselves full-time to this thing. It also means that they can't get doxxed and fired from a job. For all sorts of reasons, the ideal is for people to be making their living from this content, whether it's dissident or pagan or whatever. So I think this is something that to ordinary people, it might seem a bit grasping or commercial or selfish, but it's actually a very real concern, because the effect of it is to galvanize a bunch of talented people, and talent is rare in the world, to galvanize them into devoting themselves full time to producing good stuff. So it's an essential thing, really. And this is something that the left understand effortlessly, even though they're supposedly anti-capitalist and whatever. Well, once upon a time they were. They always understood this, that if something can be self-sustaining, then that's terrific. That means that it doesn't constantly need to ask for help and backup and all infusions of finances and whatever. So that's the ideal. Dave, do you want to say anything there?
No, it's just I agree with what you guys are just talking about. Here's the deal, is that you start creating stuff the way that we are, the guys you see on the screen, and just about everybody that you have seen here, a millennial, and we'll see everywhere, all your favorite guys that do this thing. You put your neck out. Pretty much your future financially is as far as having a normal financial stability is cooked. You put your neck out, it's over, right? You might be able, like, for example, I've been in the game here doing this for, I don't know, over a decade. Yo, I've been in here for a long time. I can't go pursue a really high-end career. Maybe once upon a time I could, this stuff that I've created wouldn't have hurt me, but nowadays that's not really it, right? So I gotta hustle. I gotta do things a different kind of way. You know, I'm in the underground. I live here now. We all live here now, right? And we want guys to do that. We want that to become normal. And also not just that, but we want good stuff. We want high quality stuff. We want excellence, and excellence costs money, right? All of the beautiful, most beautiful, magnificent things that you can think of in history that Western civilization or any civilization has created was bankrolled, cost money. You think the Sistine Chapel was a labor of love? You think Notre Dame was a labor of love? You think of your favorite albums, just, you know, favorite bands, favorite albums. You think that those guys just did that as maybe their first album, but after that, you have to get paid at some point. You got to get paid at some point. And I don't ascribe to this, this idea of kind of like poverty worship and nothing should ever cost anything and everything should be free. I'm the opposite way. I think all my favorite guys should get rich. I think everybody should get rich. I think wealth is a blessing. I think it's awesome. I would love it. I would love it if all of our favorite guys could just bankroll whatever they want, could lift whoever they want up. Yo, hey, bud, you want to do this film? Here's this much money. Hey, bud, you want to put out this album? Here's this much money. You want to do this show? You want to do this, whatever people could think of. We have budgets to do this kind of stuff, because you lift up the right people, they're going to bring people with them. And that's always, here's the deal. It's like, this has always been my thing. Is when you support just me, I support others. I'm always doing that. This is part of the Big Dave philosophy of doing good business, right? When you get lifted up at some point, you lift others up too. I think good stuff should always be supported, always.
Yeah, and, high tide raises all ships. That's a very important thing to remember. And again, the left have always known this. I mean, they don't expect their activists to work on nothing and live on nothing and live on peanuts, live miserably while they're dedicated to the cause. That's completely unrealistic.
Yeah, exactly. How many of those guys they got that are like rolling in it, living luxuriously and lavishly for doing goofball leftoid crap? You know, they put out,
When I hear about the money that they're making, like Destiny and so on, it's just, it's mind-boggling, you know? but I mean, they can have a completely different type of life. Yeah. But yeah, that's a whole other thing. It just staggers me, the sheer asymmetry between our side and well, our opponents, let's say.
Well, of course, they are structurally tied into the deep state and the powers that be, right? They have patronage networks. There are flow-on effects from being connected to the center, to the imperial center. It's not because Destiny is more talented than Big Dave. Not even close. You know, it's because, you know, they stand in a certain relation to the political structure. But what we have as dissidents, and also this is an important part of folkish heathenry, is the folk economy, right? We support each other. We buy from each other. We are 100% pro nepotism. That is like, you know, that's the way forward, right? This is actually one of the things, the reason why Hearthfire is possible as far as, at least financially, is basically because of Imperium, right? That's the thing that kind of bankrolled that. So people supporting, you know, dissident businesses like Imperium, like all the other dissident businesses, like, you know, Marcus Follin's Legio Gloria, all of these, the infrastructure and ecosystem that we have here, the more that people support this sort of thing, the more that these ventures are going to start to pop up. And eventually it's going to reach a critical mass point where we are essentially uncancelable, and we have a sort of insular space that cannot be infiltrated. It's like a kind of Imperium in Imperio. It's like a little thing that just exists as a node in the system that can no longer be displaced. Yeah. Right? So this is the importance of supporting what we call folk economy, or if you want to, you know, speak in about the dissident scene, to support dissident businesses, right? Because the more you do that, the more you're going to get this kind of stuff. The more of this kind of stuff you get, the more, you know, it's just going to snowball over time. And I think it's a real white pill that this kind of thing is starting to happen now. And I think it's a real black pill for the powers that be that see this kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is something that they've been trying to thwart for years and years. I think all of us speaking now in this stream have personally experienced it. So you don't need to describe it. So yeah, I'm very glad that you're doing this, and I'm very. It sounds like something that is only good. It's like it can only help. It can only do good for our community. So I think it sounds great. I suppose I should ask you who is involved. You mentioned Dan from the Fergan, and who else?
You got Tom Rousel, Survive the Jive. You got Marcus Follin, the Golden One. You got Mimmers Bruner. You got Wessex Nomad. You have
The Bog.
You got The Bog. You got Big Dave, right? You got you got Mike's got like how many shows you got, bud?
So I got two podcasts on there. So just for guys who are not familiar with The Bog. So The Bog is Dave as well as a couple of other guys, other heathens, and they do like theology, matters of faith and practice and that kind of thing. That's kind of like the real religious podcast. It's a very popular one. Guys who are not familiar with Dan from the Fergan, he is the the voice behind Wolkensman. He does interviews, commentary. He does a lot of episodes on theology as well. Tom Rousel has a new podcast called Radio North Sea International, which has a bit of a nautical theme to it. He talks about, you know, topics about like European history, a lot of prehistory and that kind of stuff, like anthropology. We've got Marcus Follin, the Golden One. He's brought back a podcast called Physique Manufactorum, which is his, this is like his training videos, right? He's like basically helping you get jacked. Right?
Helping you get juicy.
Yeah, juicy. That's right. I've got my own podcast, The Outlander, which is basically a sort of like solo video podcast where I take guys on a tour of the Australian wilderness, and we talk about anything that's on my mind. You know, a lot of like folkish topics. A lot of sort of like practical wisdom and things like that on that. We've also got the Wessex Nomad. He's been on Millennial for the last couple of years, I think. Travel documentaries, beautiful like cinematography where he's kind of taking you on a tour throughout the British Isles and elsewhere, wandering and just it's amazing. I just love that. We've got Mimir's Brunner, which is it's a YouTube channel that sort of was defunct a little several years ago.
It's these are funny. Like, I should just say, I was going to get in contact with them once to invite them onto Millennial. I don't actually know if it's one guy or I can't remember now, but and I couldn't do it somehow, or I realized they'd gone defunct. So there was some reason why they've never appeared on Millennial. Okay. But it's not because I didn't want them on. I should just say that.
They do excellent work. Beautiful, like little mini documentaries and video essays. And they're coming back on Hearthfire. So that's a bit of a white pill. And the last one that we've got so far, we've got more coming too, but this is the last one of the ones that are live now, is what I call the Newark Roundtable, where myself and another heathen, it's our book discussion podcast. So what we did for the first three episodes was we took one poem out of the Poetic Edda and we did a real granular analysis. We took it like stanza by stanza and unpacked not all of, because it's endlessly deep, but we unpacked some of the layers of like religious background, some of the like anthropology, some of the linguistic analysis. We also brought on a gentleman for those three episodes who has done a translation of it out of the Old Norse.
Keith.
So this is, Keith Osgood. Yeah, shout out to Keith. Go buy his translation, Keith, of Völuspá. So this is like, we want to make that podcast into something kind of like a university level discussion course on like some of these books, like that kind of thing. So we're really ambitious with all these shows. Every show has a different angle. Every show is a little bit different in its approach, what it's trying to do. And we've got other stuff that's coming as well, because we don't just want to do theology all day, every day. I love that stuff. There's a lot of room for that, but we want other things too. We want to do like a cooking show. Marcus Follin's helping us get in shape. Tom Rousel's doing like historical deep dives. It's not just the same thing over and over again. We want to create a space for folkish heathens, and more broadly in the dissident space, we want to create a space that guys can live inside of. We want to create a little sort of like a shelter that people can inhabit. And I think that that's really important. And in some sense, that's what's going on here in Millennial, right? Like at this time of the year, is it's a cozy environment where guys can like come in and it's familiar and you love it, right? Like that's kind of what we're trying to do with Hearthfire in a slightly different iteration.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That is how I think of Millennial. I try to think about different aesthetics for different years, and one of them I would like to have is a like an ice mountain, and inside there's a cave in it, and you go into the cave and then you find a fire, like logs fire and the Yule Pope sitting next to it. I think that would be really, because it's like this idea of getting away from the world into a safe place.
It's like a shelter from the storm, right?
Yeah, exactly. But not deluding ourselves about the storm, not trying to escape it, but a respite from it. That's all. These are the considerations that go into it each year. what is it that is being created? Because it matters, because it affects the whole way that people perceive it, the way that they experience it. So it's nice to hear you making similar, taking similar things into consideration with with Hearthfire Radio, because I certainly identify. I understand what you're saying.
Yeah. I also think it's important. One of the things that we really wanted to put out there and emphasize is the folks that are on Hearthfire, people that live this lifestyle, that are in this community in real life, people that can tell you, you know, how do I pray? What do we eat on these holidays? How we go about doing this? Because in real life, we have this community, and it has not a whole lot of internet footprint. It's kind of this whole enclave, this world within a world that, you know, people don't really know. If you're in the broader it's kind of adjacent to the dissident sphere, but it predates it by many years. And the folkish heathen community has been very, very influential on dissident politics in a lot of ways, right? For going back, you could say going back to the 1950s and 60s, right? We're kind of like the proto dissident guys, the folkish heathens. These ideas of kind of right wing ideas of environmentalism, things like that. These kinds of ideas about technology, conversations about technology, conversations about identity. These kinds of things came out of our community in real life a long time. A lot of guys don't even realize that how influential we have been. Right. So for a lot of guys that are coming into dissident spaces and they're learning about it politically, we're saying, like, here's this community that's always I don't know about always. Obviously that's a whole other conversation, kind of the different iterations and different epochs of the folkish timeline. That's a whole other conversation. But for guys that come into these spaces and get interested in these ideas and want to meet people in real life and kind of live an ancestral identity and live a folkish identity and have people that they hang out with that understand their worldview and understand them and kind of, you know, live a spiritual lifestyle with higher meaning in a way that their ancestors did. We have guys on Hearthfire that are in this community, and it's a very tight knit community that it's kind of like everybody knows everybody, even across countries, right? Like, for example, I know the guys online that are, you know, from England or whatever. I've met some of them in real life at different events. They know this guy. I know this guy. Everybody knows a guy that knows a guy. It's almost like we're almost like the freaking Amish or something. We all freaking know each other. And it's really a positive thing to get into, right? When you first come to it, I hear this all the time. There's a big event that I absolutely love in my area on the East Coast in the United States. Called the Folkish Summer Hollowing. It's hosted by a group called the Ermine Folk, who are good friends of mine. The leader, Mike Saginario, is a good friend of mine. He's been in the game for who knows, probably longer than some people listening have been alive. He's an OG in it, right? But they have this beautiful, beautiful event every year, and every year it keeps growing and growing. And folks from the distant sphere come just check it out, just to be with like-minded people, to just see what we do, because they have love for their ancestors. You can't come into this, whether it be nationalism or dissident politics or what have you, and not become interested in your history of who you are, right? We are the guys that are interested in reforging and revitalizing our identity as Europeans and the European diaspora. It's unavoidable to have this love and this interest and this reverence for it and want to see it, what it looks like in real life as a living tradition. So guys, every year come, and this is like their first event, and I meet them. And they're like, this is so beautiful. This is so awesome. Everybody's on the level. I can't believe this. X, Y, Z. They get to go and meet all the vendors that are selling cool little knickknacks, effigies of the gods, and, you know, ancestral clothing and all kinds of different stuff, jewelry and really, really beautiful, nice stuff. And they get to hear the musicians and, you know, hang out. And we have a whole weekend and we do ritual. And it's just a beautiful, wonderful thing. And they're like, almost every time, they're like, this is what I've been looking for, you know. The internet, what we learn on the internet, as far as what we call the red pill or whatever, only takes us so far. At some point, it has to manifest in real life. It has to become praxis, It has to become who we are every day. And this is what it is. This is the end. Mike makes the argument that the final red pill is the folk pill. And it's just a beautiful thing. And I love it. I'm very proud that I get to be part of just even just the little piece that I am, bringing people into a real life community, right? Obviously, what we learn on the internet and the content creators that have taught us so much. Whoa, dude, you've been such a huge, you've been like a monster in this thing for a long time. Way back when you're doing your, how many guys, like everybody listening to this, has been brought in by you to ideas they'd never heard before, right? So there's this stuff is tremendous. But what we want is for this stuff to trickle into real life. So yeah, there's a cozy, wonderful place on the internet that you can go and be around people and hear ideas that you find appealing and that you find good and true and right. But there's also communities in real life that you can go and experience it and become it and be it. And it's not something that you aren't. This is who you are. This is becoming who you are, right? It's the Edda teaches us that the gods sired us. They literally sired us. They came to Earth and they gave us the gifts of life. They gave us Oder und Lau Lati Liter Goda. And what that means is our consciousness, the sacred breath, our holy breath, Lau Lati Liter Goda, which means blood, gives us our blood, our genetics, our ancestry, our actual blood, our hair, and Liter Goda, which means good. It means like goodly or godly color or complexion, actually. And because good and God come from the same word, which actually comes from Godin, the gods, right? That's why Odin, his name is God or Godin, right? So they literally gave us our complexions, our visage to look like them. We are their children, right? This is who we are and have always been. So a lot of guys want that and they're seeking that. And there's something that calls to them because of that. I say a lot of times people say, how did you become, you know, part of this, you know, religion or whatever? So to clarify, a lot of people, for the overwhelming majority of the history of our people, there was no separation between what you call ethnos and religion. It was just our ways, right? It was just our customs. It was just who we are. You couldn't, if you went to, in fact, when Christian missionaries went to the Germanics for the first time, they say, what is your religion? And they didn't understand that concept, that there is a separation. They're like, what do you mean? This is just who we are. This is what we do. These are our ways. These are our customs, right? So it's not something that's just different. It fits you like a glove. It's who you are. And what Hearthfire Radio is trying to bring is a modern use of technology and content and all of this stuff to give people and show people who and what they have always been, what their fathers and their fathers' fathers and their ancestors going all the way back to the primordial mists of time have always been. And it's just a beautiful thing, and I'm very proud to be a part of it.
Yeah, that's a really interesting thing you said about that what we've always been. So it's not a case of becoming something or undergoing a process or whatever. It's this just is what you are. And obviously, I'm not in any way attempting to negate the faith of people who are Christian or whatever. That's fine. I've got no interest in attacking that or undermining that. I'm just noting this perspective, which is one that chimes with me, there's no real need to look for a religion as such. It's, you already are that thing. You already are a religious being. You already are the product of your history. So I think you can sort of you can relax a bit about this. I think that there's a, because a lot of people do feel this, and I've started writing a few essays about this, different aspects of it. I haven't finished any of them yet, but I think a lot of people worry about this. Like this, if they're, let's say they were raised atheist, they feel that emptiness. They feel the, mm-hmm. the loss, the absence of a transcendent meaning to their life. And I don't really, you know, I don't feel that anymore. At one point I did, but and I sort of worried about it. But I really don't anymore. It just seems like, well, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I can say articulate this off the cuff, but I'm just saying it's sort of, it seems imminent. It seems it's just there. I don't think you need to worry about it too much.
Yeah. And, you know, dude, I got Christian friends. I'm not one of these anti-Christian pagan guys that gets I'm comfortable in my skin. I've been a heathen for like 15 years. I don't even remember what it's like to be something else. So I have no hate. In fact, I respect pious Christians that do their thing. But I will say this as a man of faith, and as a man of Germanic patrilineal descent, here's the deal, is that regardless of what you think you believe, regardless of what, you know, your recent ancestors have converted to, regardless of what, you are this. This is in your blood. This is who you are. And regardless of what you think you believe, when you die, you will pass to the underworld and you will go through the ways that our ancestors have for many, many years, forever, until it is your time to be reborn. That's what our ancestors have always believed, and that is why it is true. Right. So that's probably going to get the Christians all fired up, and I don't mean it like that. You know, love to them and blessings to them. You know, we fought enough, right? There's enough beef between us for years and years, right? For however long. But, you know, that's what I believe, and that's what people should believe, I think.
Mike, would you like to chime in here with anything?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, like, the question always comes up, like, how can we go back, or can we even go back? Is this even possible? And the way that I look at it is, it would be like asking, we feel like, okay, so we've raised this edifice where you start on the ground floor and then you build on top of it and you build on top of it and you keep building and building and building until you've reached whatever, you know, you've reached the 122nd floor or whatever it is. And now we're on the 122nd floor. And the question is, you know, like, what about the ground floor? It's like, you know, haven't we got rid of that? Well, of course we haven't got rid of that, right? It's still at the foundation. These things never go away. And in fact, part of the problem with liberalism, maybe the problem with liberalism, is that it's tried to rip out the foundation, right? It's tried to go back and say, look, we've progressed beyond all this stuff. We don't need that. Let's just get rid of it and move forward, right? And I think that sort of impulse to say the year zero ideology that basically says everything prior to this point is wrong and everything, you know, afterward is acceptable, that is kind of, that's what's got us to where we are today. And it's also foolish because you can never really get rid of the foundation. Like, authority always depends upon earlier authority. Like, even the conversion that happened, it's my view that we never really seriously actually foundationally converted. That's another thing that's going to maybe get people riled up again. Like, to echo what Dave said, I, you know, no shade against the Christians. I have a lot of respect for, you know, certain parts of the Bible and for what they do. And
you publish Christian books.
Yeah, exactly.
Some of my best friends are Christians, sort of thing.
Yeah. we've got, you know, we put out Joseph de Maistre, one of the strongest, like, Catholic theologians of the modern era, right? I'm not the guy that's going to stand there and whatever. We don't need to go into that, right? But even going back to the time where we sort of turned in a different direction and converted away from our you know, the old ways, the reasons for conversion were still based on the assumptions that we carried from the old ways, right? Like, ultimately, everything kind of rests on a structure that goes all the way back to the very, very beginning. And for us to try and rip out that beginning and say, well, that's, you know, obsolete or whatever, it kind of leaves us untethered in a way that's just like deep and foundational. So I just don't think that we can ever really get rid of that, no matter what. Like, the conversion is always somewhat incomplete. So, you know, what we're doing with Hearthfire here is we're trying to, you know, apart from bringing people entertainment, which is not a trivial thing, entertainment is very, very important to us. Culture and art and aesthetics are very, very important to us. But we're trying to bring it to people in a way that's edifying. We're not just accepting any... See, the thing with heathenry and paganism is that the Christians kind of don't have this problem quite as much. There is a big lefty pagan sphere out there, right? And for a long time, that was the dominant sphere. That's changing now. I think folkish paganism is basically making massive, massive inroads. We're starting to muscle out the other side here. And in fact, we're making some important moves that they are not. Whereas non-folkish pagans are really starting to, you know, I mean, they've got massive YouTube channels. They've got huge Facebook pages with, like, you know, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of likes and things like that. But what they don't really have is a kind of, they're not building anything in real life. They have clicks on Facebook, but they don't have bricks and mortar. They have YouTube channels, but they don't have their own platform. And what we're doing is we're actually building real stuff that can stand for real, that's not virtual. That's something that they're not doing. And as a result, we are growing and they're kind of not. We're growing at the expense of them. So Hearthfire is an important step towards bringing us back to a truly authentic heathen worldview and not just a kind of reactionary anti-Christianity, which is basically what they are. So that's part of the work that we're doing.
I was going to ask, you talk about non-folkish pagans. What I'm struggling to understand what are such people other than sort of hippies?
So I can give you a quick history.
Before you start, I just mean that if it's not tied to ethnicity, then what the hell is it? I don't really understand what basis it could have.
It's liberalism is all that it is.
Yeah, it's just rebelling against Christianity.
Yeah, so the what we would call the current, the pagan renaissance, or maybe the current revitalization or the reconstruction, the modern reconstruction era, really starts in during German Romantic movements. The Volkisch movements in Germany and elsewhere. Everybody probably familiar with the Brothers Grimm. There were quite a few movements that were similar to this in Germany during this time. Some of the seeds of this started during kind of the Renaissance, with the interest in classical motifs and classical art, and kind of the bringing back of this. That was obviously more Roman flavored because it was a lot in Florence, but they were very influenced by this. And obviously some of the classical stuff made it into their flavors as well. Eventually, after the 1800s, after the World Wars, made its way to the Americas and elsewhere. And this started with what were at the time called neo-pagan movements or green movements. There's like a group that was called the Nature Boys, so on and so forth. And these guys were actually proto hippies. These guys were the beginnings of the hippie movement. There's one in the UK. I can't remember what they were called. They've changed their name now. They were actually originally called the KKK. No association to the American KKK. They were called like the Cubs of something or other. They were pretty much a sort of pagany, earthy, folky sort of just environmental group, which became green politics later, which got co-opted by progressivism. But they came to the United States, these groups, and then later it became, you know, sort of what we call the hippie movement. And the hippie movement got co-opted by American intelligence, CIA, big label companies, a bunch of normoids came into it and made it silly and stupid and you know, how it always happens. Something cool and interesting crops up, and then regular mouth breathers kind of come in mass to the cool thing and make the cool thing lame. That's what always happens, right? But that's, you know, posers, we call them. We used to call them anyways for the old guys. But a bunch of posers came in and made it cringe. But anyway, from this came a lot of figures like Stephen McNallan, Elsa Christensen, later on a fella named Valgard Murray. He might still be kicking around somewhere at the Also True Alliance. There's a lot of movers. There were a fella from Australia named Alexander Rudd Mills, who actually created the first. It was called like the something Church of Odin. He was like one of the OGs. You had a lot of these kind of movements that were popping up in everywhere. And these guys were sort of, now not these fellas, but the like the Nature Boys, the proto hippies, they had some weird practices, right? They were kind of shooting in the dark. They had some really, really cool ideas and made some really great, they did some really great work, but they also did things like they did dances where they all got naked and did some weird stuff. I disavow that stuff, but yeah, hey, I'm just being honest with our history here, right? But later on, you get a few organizations in the United States and the United Kingdom, things like the Odinic Rite, the Odinic Fellowship over there in the UK, the Also True Folk Assembly, later on the Ermenfolk, Also True Alliance, so on and so forth. During this time, this was purely folkish, right? This is purely how we describe it. At some point in the 70s and 80s, 1970s, 1980s, you get the... You get some characters that interjected with some occultic ideas and, you know, Aleister Crowley type goofy rotten stuff, and those guys went on to create what is called universalism. This idea that it is not attached to ethnos, it's not attached to ancestry and lineage. It's attached to whatever the hell there's like nothing. So they created a few groups, which I don't want to name because I don't respect them. And XYZ. So from them came what we would call lefty or universalist heathens and pagans. And they are very much informed by Wicca, which is pretty much an MI6 psyop. Yeah, heretical psyop by a pervert named Gerald Gardner, who created an MI6 sex cult of people LARPing as druids and witches. And other CIA people like I don't want to even name them. I don't even want to give their names any sort of thing. But anyway, so they went on. They created the lefty thing. What's funny is since then, those who were pretty much part of the boomer generation got cannibalized. They got canceled and kicked out and replaced with an even more ridiculous sideshow of creatures that now LARP as heathens. I don't even want to talk about what these people do, but who knows? They're obviously backed by the machine. They have links back to regime intelligence, and that's not even just like conspiracy Alex Jones stuff. This is well documented. This is legit, right? So those guys have went on to create these facades of big social media presence. And over the last couple decades, as everybody here knows, anybody right of Mitt Romney has been ruthlessly cut down and deplatformed. They persecute we get persecuted, literally get persecuted by the state. For example, last year at our event at FSH, we were supposed to have our buddy Tom Rousel fly in to do a speech at our event. The United States government blocked it and got involved and stopped it from happening. I can't remember all the details off the top of my head, but that happens. I have friends they're just families. There's families trying to practice their faith. They do nothing. They have no attachment to activism or political goings on at all. FBI investigates them. They get put on watch lists. We're talking events where there's families with children that are just trying to go pray and practice and give devotions to the holy gods. And FBI posts up at their event and takes pictures of them. They get deplatformed. They get debanked. these aren't political people. These aren't activists. These aren't guys that go out and fist fight in the streets. These aren't guys that are involved with election. These aren't political people. They're just innocent folk trying to practice their faith, and the regime persecutes them. We are literally experiencing religious persecution at the hands of the regime, and nobody comes helps us. We don't have teams of lawyers. We're not the Mormons and have all these teams of lawyers or the Catholic Church or anything like that. We have to build our infrastructures with blood, sweat, and tears and the little bit of money that we raise and fight for, right? So it's really an uphill battle just to reinstate and revitalize and practice a religion. A religion. You know, in the United States, we're supposed to have freedom of religion, all this crap, unless it is an ancestral European religion. That's, yeah, they've made that very clear.
Absolutely. This kind of stuff is reviled everywhere. And it's amazing how it happens while, well, our countries are still predominantly white. And also, we're supposedly bathed in white privilege. And yet, this is still going on. You could only maintain such an obvious lie if you had total control of the media. Otherwise, it would just be so self-evidently ridiculous. I don't know what to say about that. I just think, this is a very real thing about, like with Tom Russell, about, I think he got deported. I think he got sent back at the airport.
I think they canceled his visa or something.
Yeah, so, something like that.
Yeah,
I've heard it happen to other people as well. But it is... It is quite remarkable the degree of persecution that we suffer for this, and as you say, in the end, the only way you can, at some point, it's going to become lawfare, and you have to be able to combat that. And if you can't, then the system will crush you. It will have its way with you. And this is why a movement needs to grow, a community needs to grow. And as we were saying earlier, become financially able to pay lawyers to do things.
Yeah,
and it sounds incredibly ambitious just now, as I say it, but this is how things are done in the real world. This is a necessity.
This is why we call for folkishness, right? Because what folkishness is fundamentally is it's a kind of solidarity, ultimately. It's what Ibn Khaldun called asabiya, right? It's the sort of like clannishness of we all stick together, we all have each other's back, we all buy from each other, we all patronize each other, we all support each other, we all back each other up. And this is why folkish paganism is such a threat to the system, even though it's ostensibly extremely small, is because they can see in it the seeds of like how we win, basically, right? So it's really important, I think, the work that is going on in the folkish heathen sphere. It's really a model for anybody to look at and see, well, this is how you do it, really, right? Because for us to carve out this space where, you know, we support each other, we buy from each other, and we're essentially establishing a kind of node of like independence, a little island of sanity and support and solidarity within an ocean of hostility. This is how it works. And of course, it being folkish means it's kind of bounded because it's not a propositional identity. It's something that only certain people are in principle allowed to partake in. And because of that, it has a kind of integrity that can't really be co-opted in ways that other sort of propositional identities can. So, you know, Hearthfire is a platform that is there to entertain people. It's there for fun. And that's really important. Like, we shouldn't underscore the importance of joy that people have, and that bringing that into their lives, giving them meaning and reasons to get up in the morning. But it's about a lot more than that too. It's about establishing this model that is kind of transcends both politics and religion, and which is kind of why in the, you know, archaic period, like before our folk ever encountered any of the world religions, that they didn't see a distinction between those two things. They didn't see a distinction between the ways of their ancestors, the political realities that they lived in, and their religious praxis. It was all just kind of like one thing that we now call folkishness. So Hearthfire Radio is bringing that back. It's bringing that back in a way that I think works on multiple levels. So I am really, the fact that this thing has launched and succeeded and it's growing and it looks like it's going to go the distance is, should be a cause for a lot of optimism for people, whether it's inside of heathenry or outside.
Yeah. And we want to give a voice to the folks that are building things in real life. A lot of people don't realize, you know, I mentioned the Ermine folk, they just purchased a property and they're building a temple, right? We have several other organizations that are out there building temples across the world, right? We're building temples, we're building community centers, we're building, we have homeschool curriculums, we are building an infrastructure and have been for many years. The thing is that the people that are on the ground doing this work don't have time to go out and market themselves. They don't have time to go out and build a social media presence. You know, that's, it's a skill set to do this, to do what we do here. And just like anything, you need people that have platforms and big voices to be able to support substrata of people that are doing the praxis. And I can tell you, for many years, we have faced some pretty nasty opposition. I'm not going to say his name because he's not a public guy. He works a regular job. He's a priest in our faith and has been for many years. Excellent, excellent man. Beautiful family, goes hard for the community. He just got stopped he was just flying for business for his work, got stopped at the airport, and they pulled him to the side and ripped his stuff apart, looked through his phone, everything. This guy is not like us. He's just a dude. He's just a guy who believes. He just practices. And he later went and tried to acquire land so they could build a temple for their community. And they finagled it and screwed him over. This kind of stuff happens all the time with us. And we need to be able to have a voice and a platform that we could say, hey, these guys that are doing the work, that are getting their hands dirty, that are building things, that are helping our people, our folk, get jobs, have a place to go, taking care of the children, taking care of babies, making sure, you know, all of the things that a community is supposed to do and provide. We need to be able to say, look at what's happening to these people. Let's help them. Let's help them. Let's pool everybody that might not be out of the locality, because this is one of the weaknesses that our faith has had over the last however many decades. And it's also a strength, but it is a weakness, is it's very local. It's very, very local. It's sort of like a confederacy of localities that all kind of, like I mentioned earlier, knows a guy, knows a guy, knows a guy. And we're all kind of this nebulous thing. And we want to provide a central place where big voices can stand up and help people that are out there building. Because we're growing. We're one of the fastest growing religions in the world, right? We are going to continue to grow. And it's inevitable. It's just inevitable that we will one day become a large enough enclave in the world that, you know, we have temples in every city or in every state or in every country that where our folk are, that we have these things. So we need to build these networks and build this kind of stuff. And that's, you know, what we're really, really interested in trying to put forth and put out there and get started, at least to because we're out here, we're on the internet, we're talking, we're yakking, we got guys with YouTube channels and everything like that. You know, Joe Schmo, who just believes and serves a community of say 40, 30, 50, even 10, 12 people that's just trying to maneuver and gets screwed over by the libtodes in his local government, or gets harassed by the FBI, or gets harassed by the Department of Transportation, or harassed at the airport, or harassed wherever. It's enough. And not just, you guys said, we keep saying, and I agree, and I, you know, the sentiment that we need to, it needs to be feasible. I say it needs to be more than just feasible. We need to be able to wield power so that anytime we get messed with, even the smallest guy, you better believe you're going to deal with a whole mess of lawfare. Guess what happens when you mess with the Mormons or the Hare Krishna or the Catholic Church? They will sue your pants off. They give you a mountain of lawfare that you have to deal with, right? We need to have that power too. And, you know, it builds a little bit at a time. We're rebuilding it. But those are the kind of ideas that we're putting out there.
I completely agree. And I think this sounds like a much needed and very valuable resource project that you're doing here. I think it sounds great. And I hope it continues. You did mention a few things in the notes that you made for this. I don't know if we've covered them sufficiently or if you'd like to go into each one in a bit of detail. Challenges in getting this project off the ground. Mike, would you like to say anything about that?
Sure, yeah. I mean, there have been quite a few challenges. going into this, as we sort of alluded to towards the beginning, I was incredibly naive at the prospect of building a website and what that would require and the difficulties that we would run into, right? So basically what happened was we had the website built. It launched. For various reasons, we had to change our web guy. So the guy who is with us now is doing an excellent job, but he's not the one that built the original website. And when it launched, we had quite a few problems with it, like just technical problems, like with, logins and streaming and stuff like that. And basically what we had to do straight away, it became clear within about a month that we were going to have to do a full rebuild of the website from scratch. And like, that was not what we expected. I expected this thing was going to last us at least a couple of years, not a couple of weeks, right? So that we ran into that at first. And you know, it was one of the incredible white pills that just goes to show what a sort of like sticky audience we have, as in like they will stick with us and that they are dedicated to this, is that not only was the audience like willing to wait it out until we actually got these problems solved and we continued to grow even while we had problems, but we also had people volunteer. We had guys like who love Hearthfire Radio volunteer their services, in some cases many, many hours of work that is unbelievably appreciated. So people kind of pitched in. They saw the value of this service, and what we're building, and they thought to themselves, well, okay, I've got some skills. I can lend a hand here. And it was kind of a community effort that people pitched in to help with. And that in itself was a real, real cause for optimism. But it's also important to underscore that just like I did, I think a lot of people underestimate the scope of what's required to build a replacement for YouTube. Like, YouTube has gone through a long development cycle, you know, from whenever they launched, like 2005 or something like that. They've been around for a while, and they have a lot of funding and everything like that. You know, we're kind of starting from scratch, of course, you know, starting at a later time, so there's more tools, but there's a lot that is required. And, you know, people want all kinds of different, abilities and functionality and things on the website and everything like that. We're just really lucky that our audience has been very, very forgiving in the beginning. Now we pretty much got it dialed in. Everything is working. It's streaming nicely. There's no more login issues. We've got all of the things like RSS feeds and all of the stuff that people want. But, you know, when you're building these things, you don't really have an idea of how all of what's going to go wrong. It was the same thing even with Imperium. That's a whole other story. Building that, you know, there were many, many setbacks along the way, but it's just, we persevered. Hearthfire is a firing on all cylinders. And it's been a real learning experience for me, in addition to a white pill that people have been so supportive of us, even after we've gone through those trials.
No, that's terrific. And again, I know exactly what you mean. You think you've got it nailed down. It can't be that difficult. It should be straightforward. And then one unforeseen problem after another crops up. It's similar. I think it's similar with any big project that you can tend, even if you're trying to be cautious and careful, things will crop up that you couldn't have foreseen. So the fact that other people chip in to help, I think, is just brilliant. I'm so glad about that, because a problem that I've run into quite a few times, and many people have run into this, is that it can be difficult to get other people to lend their services. And this is partly because of the monetary thing. If you're not paying people to do something, then it's really up to them whether they do it or not. So it's a thing about human motivation. But in your case, it sounds like there were people willing to give their time, and that's great. It speaks well, actually, for your community that happened. So that's great. And then you also talked about you mentioned in the notes the need to create our own of everything.
Yeah.
I remember, I should just preface this. I remember in late 2017, people won't know this. Maybe a few people will have heard about this. But in late 2017, there was a rising awareness of censorship and of how bad it could possibly get. And there was a concept floated around in the movement, at least with some people that I was aware of. And then the concept was the electronic ethnostate. It's a nice title. And the idea was, we're going to need our own payment processor. We're going to need our own website host company. We're going to need our own domain registrar. We're going to need our own video sharing website, because that was what we were thinking about at the time, YouTube. And possibly our own bank. I mean, it was a concept at the time. Because if you are going to get cut out of everything, then that means you need to replace it with your own everything. That was as it happened, things evolved, and we haven't done that yet. We might end up having to do that. I don't know. But for now, world events have taken their own course. I won't mention Trump and all of that. But either way, we haven't needed to do that. But because we haven't done it, we've suffered. And we were talking about this earlier, about being deplatformed, defunded, cut off from income streams and so on. I've said before, life has never been the same for me since I got banned from PayPal. I think this is the case for quite a few people. You could be making quite a nice living, and then that hammer comes down, and thereafter you have a different lifestyle, because it's just completely different. Whereas if we had our own payment processor, our own funding platform that couldn't be cut off by MasterCard or whatever, then life would be very different for us. So I think if we had pursued that concept of the electronic ethnostate back in late 2017, who knows where we could be by now, 7 years later. So in a way, it's a shame. But yeah, that was just something I wanted to preface this with. So Dave, you were going to rush in and say something about creating our own everything.
Yeah, that's something that I have thought is what I do. Right. That's kind of my whole motivation. Everything, every time. Now I'm in the domain of entertainment and art and gaming and XYZ. Right. Those are kind of the lanes that I try to stay in as far as creation and everything like that. But I don't think it's absolutely not just feasible, but it's the perfect time to just make our own everything. Why, like I said, I mean, these make our own publishing. We've already done that. You got the Bizarre Archives at Imperium Press on here. Like, look at what we've done. Look at what Mike's done with Imperium Press. We crushed that. We could create our own music scenes. We could create our own film stuff, build a film studio. We got guys, shout out my boy Wolf Shield, making his own movies and stuff. I'm about to come out with a movie, right? We got guys, you got guys like Cult Games coming out with video games. We got a video game project, right? There's so much stuff that we're working on that we could just do ourselves. Why not have our own credit union? Why not have our own school system? Why not have our own, you know, medical thing, right? Why not have our own medical insurance company? You know, the Mormons do it. And who else does it? You know, every religious organization, every religious community provides these things to their people. Why can't we? We absolutely can, 100%. And not only can we should. In fact, we have to. We have a not just a duty, we have a holy duty to do so. And we will, and it's happening. But not just that. I actually want to, as far as Hearthfire goes, I want to talk about art. You know, art, man, I am such a, you guys have heard me, you guys that are familiar with Big Dave, man, you've heard me go on and on and on about aesthetics and art and the meaning that it gives to us. Dude, there's so much we could do with it, and there's so much we want to do with Hearthfire. As far as lifting up musicians, lifting up artists, you know, we want to get to a point where we can bankroll, you know, film production, bankroll just whatever we want to do in the arts and in the field of arts, right? Everyone thinks about, and I said this before, Mr. Woz, years back, you and our boy, Mr. Morgoth, shout out Morgoth, I love Morgoth, by the way, had a on Millennial, as they wrapping up your Millennial, you guys sat and talked about and you fielded questions after your big, long discussion about creation and things like Hollywood and things like music and things like video games and everything like that. And I sat there with a notepad. And I wrote down everything that that Morgoth said he thinks that it would be really hard to do. He's not sure if, you know, we can. You know, you got to do this. You got to do that. And he's right. You know, these things are big, huge undertakings. But I was like, I'm going to prove him wrong. And not because I anything against Morgoth. I love Morgoth. Morgoth has brought me on, helped me sell books. He's an excellent writer himself. Nothing at all. But in a positive way, I wanted to prove him wrong. And so far, I've scratched off a few things off of those off of that list, and I'm not going to stop until I scratch off all of it. And not only am I going to scratch off all of it, we're going to elevate that afterwards, and we're going to crush it every single time because we have some of the most brilliant, creative, imaginative people on the planet working with us that make these things and have these visions and these obsessions and these ambitions. And the only thing that's holding us up is a little bit of money. And we're starting to pull in, not just with Hearthfire or this or that or whatever. We're starting to pull in a little bit of money here and there. And soon that little bit of money is going to turn into a decent amount of money. And then a decent amount of money is going to become a lot of money. And the more money that comes in, the more projects we can fund, the more upstarts we can create. And then before we know it, we're going to look back and be like, holy crap, we have created an entire freaking universe of everything. And we don't need to touch Netflix or Hulu. We don't need to watch Hollywood. Who the fuck's ever heard of Hollywood? We're going to forget about Hollywood. We're going to forget about all these jerk-offs. And we're going to have our own stuff, our own world, our own underground of everything that you could ever want. Music genres, books, freaking whatever you could think of, right? There's just so many tabletop games, you know. All kinds of stuff. All kinds of stuff, right? I got guys hitting me because I'm in this scene. I got guys hitting me up all the time. Yo, Dave, check out this project that I'm working on. And they send me like a PDF or they send me kind of or they give me like a prototype. I'm like, dude, this is so sick. This is based. And it's only a matter of time before that like really elevates and becomes humongous and beautiful and magnificent. And now let me tell you guys, with the advent, I know there's some guys listening that are more Luddite than me. Right. Big Dave is a folk futurist. I believe very heavily in the use of technology. I used to be a Luddite, changed my mind. Sorry, I did. But that's another conversation. But with technology now, with the way that it is now, let's talk about film, for example. You know, 20 years ago, to make a movie, even a low budget one, was tough. You know, you needed at least, you know, 10 grand or something to. You needed good cameras. You needed everything, right? Woz knows. He went to school for all this stuff. Nowadays, bro, you can get an iPhone 15, 16, whatever. Netflix just approved iPhone 16 as a camera. For like a few $100, you could get everything you need to shoot a film that's of the quality of anything from 20 years ago, better, right? We're walking around with smartphones that have better shooting quality than cinematic cameras did in the 2000s, right? We got it all. You get free software, CapCut, freaking, you know, whatever you want. Different DAWs, digital audio workstations. You can get everything you need to make everything and do it on very minimal budget, right? We could do it. It's all there. The use of technology and then AI, forget about it. Special effects, forget about it. We got it. It's here. They can't stop us. All we need is obsession and vision and want to do it. And what we can create is just boundless. There is no ceiling for how high we can go. And I'm just using film as an example, right? Look at what I did with the Bizarchives, guys. The Bizarchives literally had $200 in my pocket to my name. 200 lousy freaking bucks. And with using free software and some help from my boys, I went on and created a fiction publishing business that's now in the top 20% of publishers in the world, right? Now, that's a pretty low bar nowadays because people don't read, but it sounds awesome. Mike, this guy's selling books off the charts, right? How many Antelope Hill? How many other guys out there, right? You got the Double Dealer magazine. You got, you know, how many other publishers? We've conquered publishing. Dude, we are publishing now. Dude, there are authors that call themselves bestsellers and we're the this, and we get, you know, Penguin Random House, all these jerk offs. Dude, we crush them in book sales. Crush them. Imagine if we take that idea, that ambition, and we start moving it to whatever fucking domain we want, whether it's gaming, whether it's in things that aren't entertainment related. I'm just talking about entertainment because we're already here. We're doing entertainment right now. Imagine when we take this and we go to somewhere else, right? Dude, this idea of it's hard. It's only as hard as we think, as we put upon ourselves, right? I believe that, and I believe we will do it. And dude, these coming years, 2025 is going to be a big year for us because a lot of the pressure from the boot that was on us is going to get taken off a little bit. We're going to have a little bit more space to operate for a little while. Maybe the pendulum swings back the other way. Maybe it doesn't. Who knows? I'm not here to predict that kind of stuff because that ain't me, right? But what I am going to say is we now have a window to go a little bit wild with creating things and doing this kind of stuff. And we not only can we create magnificent, beautiful things, create cool underground art aesthetics that are for us, by us, and that we can then take those aesthetics and they can pulsate outwards from our core and begin to influence society at large. How much stuff did we create? How many jokes and like memes and stuff that are now like Joe Rogan says that we made, you know, how much of our stuff is like in the White House now? Like JD Vance was reading us, right? Not me, but he's reading, you're probably reading stuff that somebody somewhere that's part of something that came off a mic. J.D. Vance, it went across his eyeballs and it's in his brain meat now. I'm telling you guys, we can do it. We can do it. It's a beautiful thing, and we can do it.
All right. Viewers, please support Hearthfire Radio, because Dave is a really good guy, and I believe in him, and I think that the more powerful this gets, the better it will be for all of us, even if you're not a pagan, even if you're not into heathenry. I think this energy is something that needs to be multiplied. So please help Hearthfire Radio. Very good rant, Dave, by the way.
Sorry, I got a little fired up there.
Yeah, it's going to be one of your top 10, I think. Mike, would you like to chip in on visions for the future of Hearthfire Radio?
Sure. Yeah. So we want to add, I mean, we're going to continue to add podcasts into infinity, basically. We have a very high bar of quality that we want to have, but it's by no means is this a closed circle. We're going to keep adding more and more podcasts. We've got a brand new podcast that's going to drop next week. So we're going to keep adding more and more stuff to this. But as the thing grows and proves itself as a concept, you know, I can't underscore the importance of having our own platform, our own media distribution platform. Now, it's not a social media platform, but it is something that could act as an alternate sort of like Netflix or an alternate Spotify. I look forward to the day where my children just don't even know what Netflix is, right? Because Hearthfire Radio, basically, it just takes up that entire space, right? Where all of our folk basically don't need to consume what is part of the machine, where we've built our own stuff. So for Hearthfire, it's going to continue to grow like that. We're going to continue to add features, podcasts. Wouldn't it be great if, as Dave mentioned, if we could do things like platform musicians or like have a place where they could put up their music videos, or we could stream movies that were you know, like filmed within our milieu and everything like that.
Oh, yeah.
It would be like, you know, this is a content delivery platform that like we've got a huge amount of potential here. And we're going to build it also into a mobile app as well. This is something that this is probably the next big technical thing that or hurdle that we're going to try to do, right? Where people can basically take this with them on their phone. They can use it for streaming. The technical aspects of streaming on mobile are quite challenging, but it's something that we can absolutely do. We have a vision for that. It's like, you know, it certainly doesn't have the network effect of YouTube. That's where everybody is on. Everybody's on YouTube, Joe Rogan and all of that. But it doesn't really matter, because what we have is we have our own thing that nobody can take away from us now, you know, short of Lawfare, basically. So this is and that is like, that's a pretty high bar, I think, for the deep state to come in and do something like that. It would really, the thing is that they have to be a little bit careful about, you know, stomping on something like this, because it really sets a precedent that makes it very difficult for anybody to really run a legitimate business. And they don't want to do that, right? Because that actually hurts the economy. We keep our house very clean. We don't allow anything on there that is like just edgelord stuff for the sake of edgelord stuff. So it's going to go the distance. It's going to be there for a long time. We're going to keep adding features to it. We're going to keep making it more anti-fragile and more attractive and interesting and fun for people to use.
Yeah.
So it's got a bright future ahead of it. We're only just getting started now.
Yeah, Hearthfire Radio is not a political thing. We don't talk politics. And there's nothing against guys that talk politics. That's their thing. You know, there's plenty of channels for that. You come over to Hearthfire Radio. You can hear a lot of cool history stuff like pointers about getting in shape, stuff about cooking, stuff about books, stuff about everything. You know, our boy Dan's launching, what is it called? Neon Nights. He's doing Neon Nights, which is a Black Sabbath reference. You know, shout out to the Black Sabbath fans, right? But he's talking about music albums, his favorite music. Like
it's gonna be a music review show on there. Yeah. So a lot of different kinds of content.
And it's, you know, it's only $12 a month. You know, you guys, you can find that in your couch. How many of you guys are paying that more than that for Netflix, for Hulu, for MGM, for freaking, you know, Amazon, for Apple TV or whatever other crap out there that's full of all the you-know-what garbage that nobody likes, right? Come on, come hang out with us. $12, that's less than a pizza. You can't even get a pizza for that no more. So for less than a pizza a month, you get Hearthfire Radio, all your favorite guys. Goldman's over there. Tom Rousel's over there. Our boy Mike's over there. Big Dave's over there with the bog. You got all kind of stuff over there. You're going to love it. So go over there and get signed up. Trust me.
Hearthfire and chill.
Hearthfire and chill.
Excellent. All right. Well, there are a couple of super chats. So we'll go through those now. If anyone does have other questions for Mike and Dave, please post them now. Okay, Alt White said, the left has the money because they have been in charge of the power system for 50 years. If we want our performers, our professors, and our technicians to be well paid, we have to get in charge of the system first. Mike, what would you say to that?
Well, I mean, you know, power does flow from the top down. There's no question about that. But at the same time, you know, the how are you going to do that? How are you going to get, how are you going to, you know, shake up that power system? Well, one of the problems that the power system has right now is that it is managing problems, right? You know, it's like there's all kinds of, the U.S. government is having more and more difficulty governing at the local level than it ever has. You know, people remember last year how the Texas put up piano wire on the border and guys, and they basically said to the federal government, come and take it, and then they didn't, right? What's happening is that the center is having a lot of trouble actually like flexing on like local structures, basically. At the state level, yes, but like also further down the line than that. What we need to do is we need to build these localized structures, these folkish, clannish structures where people stick together and basically make it more trouble than it's worth for the deep state to come screw around with us, right? And the way that we do that is by supporting each other in this folk economy way. Hearthfire is a model for that. There's many other people that are doing similar things. But, you know, if there were 100,000 Hearthfires or something like that across the United States, this would just be too much for the system to manage. And that would open up a very clear path to victory. But if we think we're going to get voted in, or if we're going to storm, you know, the halls of power or something else more dramatic than that, I don't think that's going to work. It's going to be a war of attrition that gets waged over a very, very long period of time where the system basically gets bled dry over an extended period. So if we want to take that over, it's going to be by building these little structures that are just like a little bit of trouble that, you know, make it harder to manage, you know, essentially to enforce their will against us.
Get mafia pilled.
Yeah, exactly. Don't do anything illegal, but, you know, stick together, form a clan up,
nepotism,
tribal politics
works for everyone else.
Yeah. Nepotism, tribal politics, all that stuff.
Hell
right.
Yeah.
If that happens on a very wide and deep level, then that's it. Game over. So if you want to win, this is the model.
Hell yeah.
Definitely. I kind of agree more than I do.
I think we're talking about different things a little bit too with this guy, what he said. You know, we're not trying to wrestle power away from the machine and like build an army. You know, that's not what we're trying. We're just trying to make dope stuff. That's all we're really trying to do. We can't, you know, we don't have Lorenzo the Magnificent to come in and bankroll everything yet. You know, that guy's listening, Lorenzo, give me a call. But, you know, if we can't get guys big paid like Hollywood, but we could get guys medium paid. Your medium's pretty good. You got to start somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, Swala says, great millennial so far. I'm half Norwegian and trying to get in touch with my heritage. It's funny because you mentioned this earlier. Do you guys know anything about the Ermin folk? They have an annual mm-hmm. event in PA, which is very close to me. And
yeah.
Of course, you did mention them. So
yep, I go every single year. I love them. They're great. If you are of Germanic heritage and you are looking for to come home to your ancestral tradition, you know, this is, you know, the Ermin folk are a really great starting point to go and jump into the community. A lot of folks, when they come in, they say, so I'm going to lay this out for everybody that is maybe a little bit intimidated by this, because it's true. We have our own lexicon of things that we say. A lot of folks have been in the faith for a long time. The stuff that we talk about, like, what does that word mean? What does this mean? What does that mean? So, jump right in. Just show up, pull up, come to the events. You're gonna love it. Great food, great people, great laughs, a lot of fun. Dude, Ermin folks, Folkish Summer Hollowing is a 4-day event. It's in the mountains of Pennsylvania. It's beautiful. You're gonna have so much fun just hanging out and chilling. You're gonna learn so much. There's vendors there. There's a karaoke night on the first night. Everybody gets, you know, everybody has sips on a little bit of mead. We get silly and sing songs, and it's a lot of fun. So much fun. It's very, very family friendly. There's so many kids running around. Kids outnumber the adults all the time. Kids just run amok. It's a beautiful, wholesome family event. It's very, very reverent. We have, you know, so far last year and the year before, Mike built these big gold effigies of the gods of Thor and of Odin, and unveiled them every year, and they're just breathtaking to see these sparkling gold, gilded in gold effigies. Nothing like this has been built in like 1,000 years, and he unveils them, and it's really the rituals are the biggest rituals I've ever seen. Sometimes 100, 200 people are there standing around in reverence and devotion. We do the bloats based on the work of the Nerona Society. So it's these really ancestral. We follow all of the steps, and we sing the Galdurs. But I'm going to lay this out for anybody listening that is interested and might be intimidated, and you're looking to start to practice heathenry. There are a few poems that you need to read from the Poetic Edda, right? You need to learn. You need to read Voluspá, you need to read the Havamál, and you should read Rigsthula. Those are the only three you really need to know. You need to learn a few Galdurs, which are sung prayers. The equivalent would be like a hymn, right? You learn a few prayers, learn that, and then just show up to bloat. It's really, really easy. And if you want to learn Galdurs or whatever, I think I have some videos. Nerona Society has a lot of material on it. Check them out. Lots of great stuff. You don't need to read a whole big stack of books and understand every single poem in the Poetic Edda. You don't need to become a historian or learn a couple prayers. Read a couple very short poems and just pull up and just jump into the community and come up. We're totally chilled, normal, regular, fun, cool guys. These are cool people doing cool stuff. You're absolutely going to adore it. My children cry. Like my kid, when we leave Folkish Summer Halloween, my kids cry. And all year they're, when are we going to go back to the Halloween? When are we going to go back? Because it's such a wholesome, wonderful time. And it's like, it almost become, you know how like you have family members that are like your favorite family members, but you only see them like once a year or whatever at certain events, Christmas or whatever. It's like that. You show, yo, you see them, you haven't seen them, you catch up, you hug, it's all hugs and friendship, and you spend the whole weekend, 4 days together. So good. It's the best. You're going to love it. You're going to love it. Show up. Show up. You're going to regret it if you don't. So learn those things that I told you and just show up.
It does sound like a lot of fun. Mandelbrot Dust has said something that might be connected. I'm not sure, but either way, it sounds quite pleasant. He says, I'm sawing upon a crust of rye bread that I just baked, sopping up beef stew. Sounds very nice, Mandelbrot. Congratulations. I hope you enjoy it. The Celt Denise says, hail the folk.
Hail.
Thank you very much. Hail indeed. Stephen. And I asks whether I've seen a particular video by Sargon. No, I haven't. But since you've pointed it out to me, I will watch it after this stream is over.
You got beef with Sargon, don't you?
Nah, not really. Once upon a time, but nah, not really. And also, right, so Ben said, I love Millennial every year. Thanks for the great content. It usually gives me things to listen to well into January and February. Well, good. I'm glad. And then Black Pigeon Pilled. Well, okay, Stephen C. said, inspiring stuff. Thank you, Stephen. And Black Pigeon Pilled asked, I'm curious what Hearthfire make of the Aura Linda book. Mm-hmm. As with many heathen content creators, I'm always intrigued with how the pagan blends with the esoteric. Good Yule all. So, Aura Linda book.
Yeah. So, Aura Linda book is not a legitimate source. It is something that was cooked up very, very late. It's not a real heathen source. It's something that, you know, I don't want to call it a hoax, but it's not an authentic source. The authentic sources are the hierology of the authentic sources are, you have the Poetic Edda is number one. And then after that, you have the Prose Edda, which is written very late. And you have things like Saxo Grammaticus and, you know, Culture of the Teutons and Tacitus Germania and stuff like that. But number one is the Poetic Edda. Orelinda isn't in the picture at all.
Yeah, definitely. You could also probably add to that certain folk tales, which are, even though they're not like scriptural, I mean, we don't actually, our religion is not a scriptural religion, but the folk tales, they really do sort of instantiate a like archaic worldview. So I think that's a good supplementary source, but definitely like the Poetic Edda is the beginning of it. The Prose Edda is sort of in some ways commentaries on that, but also additional like myths and whatnot from a Christian source. But yeah, I mean, I also can't underscore, like, as much as like we are obsessed with authenticity and getting things right and doing things the way that our ancestors did, you know, one of the strengths, I think, of what we're doing is that there is work to be done, that we actually have things to build. We're not just sort of going through the motions and repeating exactly what's been done before. And in fact, part of the strength of what we're doing is the fact that there are a few gaps that need to be filled in. There is like an active project that we're working on, which is recreating and restoring our ancestral faith. And the fact that we have work to do is actually kind of a blessing in disguise, I think, because it's exciting. It means this thing is alive. It's growing. We have a part to play in it. And that's actually part of the excitement. So yeah, definitely read those sources, get involved with the community, and you know, understand that you have a part. You have a part in the growth and birth and rebirth of this religion.
I do want to point out one more thing he mentioned about he's interested in the esoteric stuff. Now, obviously, there's esoteric elements, as there is with any type of religion. But as a whole, we are an exoteric religion. It is meant to be practiced with others, meant to be practiced as a clan, as a group, as a nation, or as a thjod is what the word is. Right. So it's there are esoteric elements. But before even thinking about the esoteric, learn the exoteric, learn how to bloat. You know, Odin says in the Edda, you have to know how to bloat before you start looking into the mysteries and into the secret hidden meetings and stuff. Learn how to bloat and have a community that you bloat with.
All right. There was one more super chat from Alt White, and it's a message to me saying, you are the best host ever, Millennial. Truly a treasure to our community. Well, thank you very much. That's very kind of you to say so. I do my best, and I'm glad to know that it's appreciated. All right, so please support Hearthfire Radio, or at least check it out, have a look at it. Please support everything that Dave and Mike do, respectively. And yeah, I guess that's it. And unless there's anything else that either of you would like to say before we end.
I would like to say, come check out our stuff. We got the, you know, you got the Bizarre Kives. We're putting out great based fiction. Check out Imperium Press. Great, great books, man. Studies and Reaction. You got all kinds of great stuff over there. The Western Canon series. You want to check out me and Mike and some other stuff? We do the Culture Dads. That's culturedads.com, culture with a K, culturedads.com. You get signed up. It's behind the paywall, but it's great content. Go over there, get signed up. Lots of great stuff over there. Get hardback copies of the Imperium Press catalog. I got my show, The Bizarre Cast, coming back with my kinsman Shane. Some folks will remember that. Dude, we're always working. Follow me over on Twitter at Big Dave Martell, Bizarre Kives at The Bizarre Kives, obviously, Culture Dads, Imperium. You guys know where to find us. Just type it in. Look it up. We're out there. We're on Telegram. We're on X, I guess it's called now, X. So thank you. Well, I just want to say, man, thank you so much for having us. Blessings to you. Millennial is one of the things that I look forward to every year. I absolutely love. I love this tradition. And going on 10 years, this is a decade of this tradition. And this is all of your creation, not just as a podcaster, but as an artist and as a visionary, right? that has its own aesthetic feel. It has all of this kind of stuff. All of the listeners love you and have loved your work for many, many years, me and Mike included. So thank you so much, Mr. Woes, and blessings to you and blessings to your wonderful audience.
Yeah, I'd just like to say a thank you for having us on, and also congratulations for Millennial turning 10. This a decade of this stuff is a serious achievement. You're one of the OGs, the first guys, first movers in this thing, and the fact that this tradition continues and it's just as strong as ever, despite, you know, setbacks and deplatformings and everything like that, is really a testament to the fact that, you know, this kind of thing will continue to live forever. And here's to another decade, and here's to several more decades of Millennial. Thanks for having us on. I'm not going to do the plugs. I'm not going to, you know, Dave's the king of plugs. I don't want to dunk on Michael Jordan. That's a mistake. So yeah, just thank you for having us on. Appreciate the, you know, what you do and all of that. Appreciate the audience. Thanks to everybody, and happy Yule.
Well, thank you to both of you for your kind comments about Millennial. It's much appreciated. I should, before we finish, I should read out this final super chat from Bone, who says, I'm one of the people who just pulled up to FSH. I've forgotten the name, sorry. It was everything Dave sells it as. My daughter still talks about our Pennsylvania vacation. We'll be there next year as well. That's good.
Hell yeah. Hell!
All right. Excellent. Okay. Thank you, everyone. That's it for this night, which is the third night of Millennial X. Tomorrow, I'll be back with another four interviews, and it will be with the traditional Britain group, then Josh Firm, who some of you will know from the Lotus Eaters, and then MW Public Mod Team, that is the people who moderate my Telegram group. I thought, I'll talk more about that when I introduce that one, but it's a bunch of people that I've known quite well for quite a long time. Some of them, 2015, actually. So a long time. And I felt they work hard. They give their time every year. Well, throughout the year to help me and help look after the Telegram groups, because there are several groups now. And I, there's no way for me to thank them or remunerate them. And so I thought it would be nice to let them have an appearance on Millennial. So that's going to be tomorrow night. That should be quite an interesting stream. I think it'll be quite laid back, and it will be a chance to hear some of the people that some of you will know from Telegram. So that's going to be quite unusual. And then finally tomorrow will be Whiskey and Ashes, who's someone I meant to have on years ago, and for various reasons it didn't happen, but it's going to happen now. So that will be another interesting night, hopefully, of Millennial tomorrow. In the meantime, Dave and Mike, thank you for appearing on Millennial X, and good luck with Hearthfire Radio. All right. And everyone else, I will see you tomorrow. Bye-bye for now.
We hope you're enjoying Millennial. The festival goes on, but how about giving something back to your tireless host? Sometimes the old ways are the best. To send Millennial Woes some special Yuletide cheer by post, you can use the P.O. Box. Address on screen now. Millennial amounts to 3 months of work for the vile vlogger. Please help him to keep the lights on.